we go. Why do we have Passover? Right here. This is the reason. These guys are going to have a heated battle, a heated exchange. Pharaoh says to Moses, get out of my sight. I never want to see you again. And Moses tells him every firstborn son in Egypt is going to die. And that is Passover. And this is after 9 plagues have taken place over the previous year. This is 9 to 12 months of plagues. Devastated the economy. As they show the power of God over nature and the nation of Egypt, both. But not only that, they show the power of God over Satan and his serpent. Because who's behind all these false gods? And then they show the foolishness to the people, the foolishness of idolatry and false gods. The Lord controls life, not Ra. The lesson about the false gods and the idolatry, this wasn't just for the Egyptians. This is for the Israeli people, the Hebrews as well. False idols are foolish. Passover, present, and future, I call this, because there's some present commands he's going to give and there's some future commands. What the real thrust of this passage is that God's saying, I will pass over you. And chapter 12 is about redemption. It's from the word redeem, which is from the Latin word to buy back. This is really broken down into two things here. On one night, God's power over Pharaoh and his gods. Now, there's a future memorial that is going to be repeatable year after year after year after year, and that's that shows God's loyalty to his people, and this is what he wants them to remember. Because God's going to be loyal to his people not only on this one historic night, he's going to be loyal to his people from then on. I ask you a question. A line or a circle? This relates to how the Bible is written. You know, whenever I teach, I always want to kind of model for you how to study for yourselves. But here's one of the problems with the Bible. We have Western minds, and the Western mind uses linear logic because we think in terms of past, present, and future, or 1, 2, 3, 4, A, B, C, D. We like things to start at the beginning and end at the end. The Oriental mind or the Hebrew mind is not that way. They think more in terms of circular logic. Now, when you come to the Bible, you really get an insight into how they think. And when we come to this passage, this is what happens. Moses starts in the present. There's the way the book's broken down. The present are in these verses. The future are in these verses. Look how mixed up that is. He goes from present up to 13, then he jumps to the future. Then he goes back to the present, then he jumps to the future. Present, future. Now, we're going to go through this in a linear fashion, because it's easier to comprehend. So we're going to do all the present stuff, and then we're going to go back and do the future stuff. And I don't know if you read through this, and if you notice that, it's like, where is he? He's talking about, what's he talking about here? What they're doing that day or what they're going to do in the future? Remember, the point is this. Passover is about one great night, which is one of the greatest sign miracles in all of history. One great night, which is, again, you got to remember, it's not repeatable. And that's the thing about a miracle. The reason a miracle can't be scientifically tested is because it can't be repeated. So this one great miracle is going to be the basis for one ageless memorial, meaning there's no time limit on it. And it can be repeated time and time and time and time again until the end of time. So this one-time event becomes a perpetual reminder. Let's go to chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year to you. And even though it's not the beginning of their civil year, it's going to be the beginning of their worship year or religious year. And it's going to be about April. Plagues have been in effect for about 9 months to a year. Now, here's what he says. Speak to all the congregation of Israel. Here's what I want you to tell them. On the 10th of this month, they are to each one take a lamb for themselves according to their father's households, a lamb for each household. Now, if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his neighbor nearest to his house are to take one according to the number of persons in them, according to what each man should eat. So you are to divide the lamb. So they would know about how far a lamb would go. And say, okay, let's get a lamb. And let's try to get this many people to partake. Now, what this happened later, one lamb became food for about 10 people, 10 to 12 people. Verse 5, your lamb shall be an unblemished male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. Could be either one. What's the difference between a sheep and a goat? A sheep makes wool. A goat makes cashmere, because a goat has hair, right? You shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel is to kill it twilight. That at twilight is literally in Hebrew between the evenings, somewhere between 12 o'clock noon and sunset. So it's about midday to sunset. That's between the evenings. Jesus, for instance, died about 3 p.m. And that's about the time they were killing the Passover lambs in Jerusalem. Sunset, remember, for the Jewish people, begins the new day. You shall kill it at twilight on this 14th day, and when the sun sets, that's the 15th day. Then verse 7, moreover, they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel, that's the overhead of the door, on which they are to eat it. And they shall eat the flesh that same night, roasted with fire. They shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Now the unleavened bread represents sin, and bitter herbs, this also relates to Egypt in that they're in slavery. So bitter herbs represent hardships. Sin and hardship. Now going on, do not eat any of it raw or boiled at all with water, but rather roasted with fire. And fire, again, is a picture of judgment. So this lamb is going to be judged, burned up, both its head and its legs, along with its entrails, cooked whole, like on a steak. And you shall not leave any of it over until morning. But whatever is left until morning, you shall burn it with fire. So it's got to be burned up completely if it's not eaten. Now, you shall eat it in this manner, with your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. That means be ready to go at any moment. And then it says this, it is the Lord's Passover. The lamb is the Lord's. Verse 12, he's going to explain why that is. For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be a sign for you. Now this is important. The blood's going to be a sign for you on the houses where you live. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Now, God is not going to look down and say, oh, I see that you put the blood on the doorpost. You must be good people, therefore I'm going to pass over you. He's not looking at them. He's looking at the blood. Their condition, their state of mind, no matter what they were or what they are, God says, if I see the blood, I'm going to pass over that house. The blood for them is a sign that God's going to pass over this house. Gives them assurance. There are going to be two kinds of people. They're going to put one person's going to put the blood on the doorpost. They're going to go, the Lord's going to pass over me. I can rest in the Lord. The other one's going to put the blood over the door and go, oh boy, I hope this works. They have doubts. But is God going to say, well, because you're doubtful, I'm not going to pass over you? No. He's going to see the blood on the door and pass over them. It's the blood of the Lamb that's important. Now, let's look at the commands. He's going to really kind of restate everything. 21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel, and he's going to say to them, the first 13 verses of what God told Moses, now Moses is going to pass it on. Go and take for yourselves lambs according to your families, and slay the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood which is on the basin, and apply it to some of the blood that is on the basin to the lintel and the two doorposts. None of you shall go outside the door until morning. 23, for the Lord will pass through to kill the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the doorposts, then the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you or to kill your firstborn. And that's the commands. You go do that. Sometime between noon and 6, they put the blood on the door, they went into the house, God says, don't leave the house. The events of the night. Here's what happens on the night. 12:28. Then the sons of Israel went and did just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron to do, so they did. Now it came about at midnight. This is the actual night. They've been in the house since sunset with the blood over the door. The Lord comes at midnight, struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive, who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. So no respecter of position, person, wealth, foreigner, slave, all firstborn children were killed in the house. And Pharaoh arose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians. There was great cry in Egypt. Now this isn't the first cry we read about in Egypt, is it? The Hebrews cried out to the Lord for deliverance. Now the Egyptians are crying out to their gods, evidently. But there's this great cry, there's this great mourning, for there was no home where someone was not dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron at night and said, "Rise up, get out from among my people, both you and the sons of Israel, and go worship the Lord as you have said. Take both your flocks and your herds as you have said, and go." No compromise now. Just get out of here. Notice what he says, though. "And bless me also." Oh, that's a horrible admission for him. Blessing means that the greater blesses the lesser. He's admitting to Moses, if I'm asking your blessing, you are greater than I. 33. "The Egyptians urged the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, 'We shall all be dead.' So all the people took their dough before it was leavened, with their kneading bowls bound on their clothes on their shoulders, before the bread had time to rise. Now the sons of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, for they had requested from the Egyptians articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians," meaning the Egyptians looked upon them with favor so that they would leave, "so that they let them have their request. And in this way," or thus, "they plundered the Egyptians." Now, God had told Moses this when he first met with him, that you are going to leave with all the wealth of Egypt. And of course, in Moses' mind and these people's mind, they must wonder, how can that possibly be? How could he accomplish that? The Lord makes these fantastic promises, and we can't figure out how he's going to do it till he does it. 33. "The Egyptians urged the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, 'We shall all be dead.' They saw the firstborn dying." What were they thinking?
We're next.
Is he going to kill everybody? That's their anxiety speaking out. And when it says God gave them favor to give them their wealth, this was their motivation. We have got to get these people out of here. Their fear is that we shall all be dead. They're horrified. Now the completion, 1250, jumping ahead. What you get here is that they did what Moses told them to do, which when you think of the Hebrew people, you go, that's incredible in itself. That's a miracle within a miracle right there. "Then all the sons of Israel," it says, "all the sons of Israel did so. They did just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron." Then if they hadn't, they would lose their firstborn. So the results are, in 51, that it came about on the same day that the Lord brought the sons of Israel out by their hosts. So they all came out. All of them came out. Going on, 13. "Then the Lord spoke to Moses and said this, 'Sanctify to me every firstborn, the first of every offspring of the womb among the sons of Israel, both man and beast. It belongs to me.'" That's every firstborn. That's masculine. That's male. That's the final command that he gives on this night. This is the progression of events on that night. This has been about a 5-day process. The 10th, every family picked a lamb. They nurtured that little lamb, made sure it didn't have any blemishes. Had to be a male about a year old. Keep it around for 4 days. Then on the 14th, in the middle of the afternoon, you kill it. Like, that had to be devastating for the children that it had this little lamb, you know, romping around. But you kill it. This little lamb is going to be the substitute for the firstborn in the house. So it's the blood of the lamb that's redeeming their firstborn. That's why he says what he says in 13:2. So let's go to Moses' future. He's going to now give them instructions about what they're going to do in the land. Going to be in the land. And of course, why did they have to be in the land? Because God had made a promise to Abraham, this is going to be your land. So he's going to look future and say, in the land, you're going to remember the unleavened bread. Now we go back to 12:14, we're going to pick up the future. This is the way we like to think. What happened on that night? Now what's it going to be like for the future? 12:14, he says, "Now this day will be a memorial to you. You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You are to celebrate it as a permanent ordinance." This is a combination of ordinance and feast. Now, the Hebrew word for feast means a holiday, paid vacation. An ordinance is a mandatory appointment, no option. And actually, there's no option for the feast because the two are connected. Now, look at this. Here's the feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. But on the first day, you shall remove leaven from your houses, For whoever eats anything leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Now, that can mean anywhere from you lose your rights to fellowship, you lose your rights to worship with your fellow Israelites, to you can die. Loss of fellowship to loss of life. 16. And on the first day you shall have a holy assembly, and another holy assembly on the seventh day. On these 2 days, no work at all shall be done on them except what must be eaten by every person, meaning you can cook. The wife can cook, the father can kill an animal. That alone may be prepared by you. 17. You shall also observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a permanent ordinance. Now when he says you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this very day, that's the 15th. Because remember, they didn't leave till midnight. And when did the 14th day become the 15th? Sundown. So that becomes the 15th. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread really celebrates them leaving. Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a permanent ordinance. See, look at it, he says it again. That not only the feast, but the Passover, both, will be a permanent ordinance. Means it's mandatory, but the Feast of Unleavened Bread is a holiday. It's a celebration time. Verse 18. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. 7 days there shall be no leaven found in your houses, for whoever eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel. Again, loss of fellowship to loss of life. Whether he is an alien or a native, whether he was not born there and brought in and adopted by a family, or somebody who was born there in a family. So there can be a mixture of people. Someone from outside, from another nation, can come in, be bought by a Hebrew family. That person then becomes part of the congregation of Israel. And you're going to find out how in a minute. You shall not eat anything leavened, it says in verse 20. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. 24 through 27, he's going to explain why that is. Do this so that you remember. He's going to say in verse 24, you shall observe this event as an ordinance for you and your children forever, till the end of time. And it will come about when you enter the land which the Lord has given you, there's that promise to enter the land, you shall observe this rite. And it will come about when your children say to you, now here's why this is important. Your children are going to say to you, these are children that haven't gone through this event. This is later generations. They're going to come up and they're going to ask you, what does this rite mean? What does it mean to you? Why do you do this? You're going to say to them, this is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the sons of Israel when he smote the Egyptians, but he spared our homes. They bowed low in worship when they heard Moses give this instruction for the future. 14 through 20 really is talking about, in the future, you are to separate yourselves from sin in the land. 24 through 27, really, the focus there is this is a guarantee that if you trust the Lord, you are safe. If you know the Lord and trust the Lord, you are safe. This is what is intended to be taught. Now look at 13, verse 3. Remember this day in which you went out from Egypt, from the house of slavery. For by a powerful hand the Lord brought you out from this place, and nothing leavened shall be eaten. And on this day, in the month of Aviv, you are about to go forth. And it shall be when the Lord brings you to the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Hivite, the Jebusite, and these are sinful, terrible people, which he swore to give to your fathers, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall observe this rite in this month. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall also be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten through the 7 days, and nothing leavened shall be seen among you, nor shall any leaven be seen among you in all your borders. Now, you get the idea that he's really trying to stress this leaven thing? I mean, I don't know about you. Doesn't it seem repetitious? It's almost like he's saying, yeah, I know how dumb you people are. I got to keep saying it over and over again. Yeah, this is really, really important. The idea of unleavened bread is so important. And you get down to the point, well, why is he doing this? Well, verse 8, you shall tell your son on that day, saying, it is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. So you're always going to be telling your children, this is what the Lord does. And it's going to serve as a sign to you on your hand, and as a reminder on your forehead, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a powerful hand the Lord brought you out of Egypt. Therefore you shall keep this ordinance at its appointed time from year to year. This event is going to be part of your life. I want it to be in everything you do with your hands. I want it to be part of what you think. That's the idea of the forehead. I want it to be part of what you speak, because you're going to have to speak this to your children so that they understand who the Lord is, what you do, what you think, and what you say. The idea of unleavened is a separation. 13:3 through 30 is really talking about being separate. Focus on leaven, that which puffs up. I don't want that to be in you. And you eating this unleavened bread is a reminder of that. Now we come to the next thing, which is really kind of two things in one here, and I have to kind of put them together from different sections. What he's saying in 12:43 through 49 is the foreigner that comes into your land must be reborn. How's that happen? Who's the first guy that Jesus says you must be reborn? Was he circumcised? No. Oh, sure, yeah, sure he was. He was a faithful Jew, a rabbi of rabbis. Of course he's circumcised. Was he reborn?
No.
11 through 16, the firstborn must be redeemed. So these are two rules that are going to apply in the future. And he says, this is what you're going to do in the future. Let's go to 43 through 49. The Lord said to Moses, this is the ordinance of the Passover. Now he's going to focus specifically on the day before the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Day of Passover, which takes place on the 14th. The day of unleavened bread begins on the 15th. Good. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. No foreigner is to eat of it. But every man's slave purchased with money. Now, what do we call buying something with money? Latin, to buy back. Redeemed, yeah. Every slave redeemed. After you have circumcised him, so first you buy him, then you circumcise him, then he may eat of it. See the pattern there? A sojourner or a hired servant, somebody just a sojourner, a wanderer, somebody just passing through to work, he can't eat it. It is to be eaten in a single house. You're not to bring forth any of the flesh outside of the house, nor are you to break any bone of the lamb or the goat. And of course, the other rule is if you don't eat it all, you burn it up. All the congregation of Israel are to celebrate this. So that would be all the congregation of Israel. That's anybody who has been bought and then circumcised, they can eat of this. But, verse 48, another condition. If a stranger sojourns with you, remember he says in verse 45, a sojourner, a hired servant, can't eat it? He's going to qualify verse 45. And he's going to say, if one of these guys comes along and celebrates the Passover to the Lord, before he can do that, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near to celebrate it. And he then shall be like a native of the land. But no uncircumcised person may eat of it. And this is to be strictly enforced. Now notice what it says there. Let him come near to celebrate. He shall then what? Be like a native. Now what's a native mean? One who is born there. He's going to be in essence reborn. Because in order to be circumcised, they had to be told something about the Lord before it would mean anything. And that is, they would have to be told that this circumcision is a sign of a promise given to Abraham, who believed God, and God declared him righteous. If you believe in the Lord and want to celebrate this Passover about the Lord who passed over and looked at the blood and saved our lives, that same Lord can save your life, can give you life, and the sign of believing in that is circumcision. Circumcision does not bring about the righteousness. The righteousness is through faith in God. And you say, I want to express that faith and that righteousness by being circumcised. I want to carry the sign of that promise. Then you become one of the congregation of Israel. And what the Jewish people had done with circumcision, they had, like men do, they had made an idol out of it. They had created circumcision as a means of righteousness, not as a sign of righteousness. The same way you have people today in the church who say baptism is the means of my salvation, or walking an aisle is the means of my salvation, or getting down and saying a prayer is the means of my salvation. No, it's a result of salvation. Baptism is an expression of a salvation that I have. See? Foreigner must be reborn. He must come and have placed his faith in Yahweh and then take the sign of circumcision, and then he can eat of the Passover. Then he becomes part of the congregation of Israel, counted among the people of God. Now, could somebody fake it? Say, oh yeah, I believe that, circumcise me. I don't know about that. I don't know if I didn't really believe it, if I'd want, you know what I'm saying, guys. What about this firstborn must be redeemed? This is a great lesson here. Now it shall come about when the Lord brings you to the land, this is verse 11, to the land of the Canaanite, as he swore to you and your fathers and gives it to you, that you shall devote or give over to the Lord, that you're going to say, Lord, this first child is yours, the first offspring of every womb, the first offspring of every beast that you own. And God's going to clarify it. The males belong to the Lord. Verse 13, but every first offspring of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. But if you do not redeem it, then you'll kill it. You'll break its neck. And every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem with a lamb. Okay, finish the thought. But it doesn't say, or else kill it. And it shall be when your son asks you in times to come. Now notice the third time, this is to teach the children what God is like. Who God is, who the Lord is. Not just God, but who the Lord is. This loyal Lord of Israel. What is this? Why do we offer a lamb when a firstborn child is born? Or when a firstborn animal comes along? Or when the donkey's born? Why do we have to offer a lamb for the donkey? And you're going to say to him, with a powerful hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt, from the house of slavery. And it came about, when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go, that the Lord killed every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord the males, the first offspring of every womb, every firstborn of my sons I redeem, I buy back with a sacrifice. 16, so it shall serve as a sign in your hand, and as phylacteries on your forehead, for with a powerful hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt. See, that's repeated again. It's with God's hand that he brought us out of Egypt. Make this part of what you do. Make this part of what you think. I want you to notice carefully here. It doesn't say to wear phylacteries. It doesn't say to wear the little boxes with the leather straps. It says let that be like a leather box that you would wear on your head. Let it be like that. And if you put a leather box right between your eyes in front of your head, you know what you see? The box. Let the law of the Lord be like that. Let this sign be like that. And let it be part of what you do and part of what you say, because you're going to have to tell your children this. This redemption is a buying back, clearing a debt. The debt is the sin debt. That's why the lamb has to die in the place of the firstborn. Now, why is it just the firstborn? God had told Pharaoh that the Hebrew people, Israel, they are my firstborn. He said that to Pharaoh. Israel is my firstborn people. Pharaoh's got to say, I was here first. Egypt existed before Israel did, right? What's firstborn mean? Preeminence. Israel's my preeminent. The firstborn son is to show that picture of preeminence, a picture of Israel. Not only that, the Egyptians' firstborn died. Why? They had no lamb to substitute to buy them back. There was no blood on the doorpost. In order to redeem an unclean thing, something has to die. Now you have a donkey. Why a donkey? Why break its neck or offer a lamb? Because a donkey is an unclean animal. A donkey can't be offered a sacrifice. So you have two choices when a donkey's born. You either kill the donkey or you offer a lamb in its place as a substitute for its life. Now, there's a lesson here that means that even a person like an Egyptian who cruelly kept us in bondage, even they can be redeemed. Because the donkey represents the Egyptians. Pharaoh, in verse 15, Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go. How many of you have owned a donkey? The donkey represents the Egyptians. Or, take them as a single group, represents Gentiles. Are Gentiles redeemable? Yes. How? By blood substitute. Either die or be redeemed. That's the lesson here. You either die or be redeemed. A substitute must be given. A lamb must be given as a substitute. Both a donkey and a lamb have value. They both cost something. They're both worth something to the farmer, to the person who owns them. I have to make a choice here. Which is more valuable to me? The donkey or the lamb? The stubborn animal or the substitute? Which is more valuable? People come to that same crossroads. What's more valuable, my life or what Jesus did in my place? So we have the same thing. from this night, this one age of memorial, you have three things: the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the redemption of the firstborn. All these three things go together. All these three things teach a lesson about this night. Now, there are seven feasts, actually, which are commanded. These are appointments. There's no option. But they're also holidays of happiness and joy. Passover was not a time of happiness and joy, but the Feast of Unleavened Bread was intended to be. The first and the last day were Sabbath days. They were to rest. They were to enjoy themselves. And the redemption of the firstborn, this is also an ordinance. And this is to remind them that Israel is the firstborn preeminent nation. So I want you to make your son the firstborn preeminent son. And I bought you out of Egypt with a substitute lamb. Okay, there's seven feasts in Israel, actually. And we're going to look at three of them because there's three of them bundled here together. And you say, well, wait a minute, only two that we looked at, Passover and Unleavened Bread, right? Well, there's another one stuck in there. As Moses gets into the land and writes a law, he writes another one. But the Passover lamb is the heart of Passover. And what they did, we already saw this, they're commanded to put the blood on that night, the blood over the lintel and on the side posts. You know, later on in history, you didn't put the blood over the doorpost because the Lord wasn't going to pass over. But you stayed in your house and he ate the Passover lamb. So the Passover night, basically, we've already covered this, it's to remember that God is sovereign over all other gods. God chose Israel above all other nations. God spared the firstborn of Israel, but he said, you know, I want you to remember that by redeeming your firstborn. And God plundered Egypt. And these are all the things he said he was going to do when he first met Moses out in the wilderness. After Passover night is a feast of unleavened bread. Eat flat cakes with no leaven. Why is that? Because they leave in haste to remind them that they left so quickly they did not have time for their bread to raise. So when they got out and got into the wilderness, they cooked this unleavened bread and it was just flat cakes. So unleavened bread, it means haste, without provision. You're leaving the moral corruption of Egypt behind. You leave sin behind and the Lord will provide. You turn your back on your former life and on the sin in your life and the Lord will provide. Now that led into this other feast that we haven't touched on called the Feast of First Fruits. Now all three of these went together. And First Fruits is the promise of future harvest. Put this on a calendar, it looks like this. Passover on the 14th. Feast of Unleavened Bread begins at sunset on the 15th. It goes to the 21st day. On the 10th day, they pick the lamb. So 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, they kill it in the afternoon. At sunset becomes the first day of a Sabbath day that they will rest then on the next day until the following sunset. But then no leaven in the house until the end of the 21st day. They can't eat any leaven or have leaven in the house. You know what happened on the Feast of First Fruits? The high priest took a sheaf at sunrise and waved it as the sun came up, waving a sheaf of wheat, looking for the future harvest of wheat. It was a promise of a harvest in the future. So there's the three spring feasts right there. Now, what's this mean? Why should we care? What does this mean, these spring feasts? This redemptive promise of a substitute lamb bringing salvation, leading to a separation from sin with the goal and the promise of a bountiful harvest. So what's that mean in terms of spirituality? Well, we have redemption, sanctification, and resurrection. And what's sanctification? That's a process by which God, through circumstances and people in our lives, tries to separate us from our sinful, stubborn habits that sometimes never go away. We have a position that we hold because God has saved us because he's looked at the blood, not something I did, but he looked at the blood and saved us. And the sanctification is a progression. It's never perfected in this life until we come to perfection and glory. And we call that, in theological terms, justification, sanctification, glorification. All represented by these three spring feasts. This is freedom. Freedom from the penalty of sin. Freedom from the power of sin in life. And freedom from the presence of sin once we're in glory. You realize when we're all in heaven sitting around and having our class up there, there's not going to be any distraction in our hearts. There's not going to be any doubt, anxiety, thinking about something else. And there's going to be no sin there, no presence of sin at all. It's just going to be joy and happiness and perfect freedom. Perfect, true freedom is the freedom from sin and all the things that drag us down. So we bring this up to here in the New Testament where Paul says in 1 Corinthians 5, clean out the old leaven. He's telling this to the Corinthian church and they got a lot of it going on. I want to tell you, these are saved people. He calls them saints at the beginning of the letter. Clean out the old leaven that you may be a new lump. just as you are in fact unleavened, for Christ our Passover lamb that also has been sacrificed. Let us therefore celebrate the feast. Now I got to look at this and say a couple questions here. What's he mean first about in fact Jesus died and therefore we are in fact unleavened? God sees us as unleavened. That's our position. That's justification. And then he goes on to say, for Christ our Passover lamb also has been sacrificed. What's he mean, also? Like the Passover lamb. See, the death of Christ, he intends us to link to the Passover event. So whenever you think of the cross and Christ saving you, you should think of the Passover event. Those are the two greatest events in history. And they're linked together. Do you think he's talking about cleaning out the leaven in their houses? He's talking about the sin in the church, in the body of people. Clean that out. He says, let's celebrate the feast. What feast? Is he saying, go back and celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread? You missed your holiday? He's not saying that at all. He's saying, with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So he's not talking about getting yeast out of your houses. He's really talking about a separated life. And these people aren't living this. Separated from the old life and from the world system. With no other provisions. I provided for myself in my old life. My stubbornness, my pride, the things I did, the things I had to have. I don't need that anymore. You think this is easy? If it was easy, he wouldn't have to tell the Corinthians this. So it's not easy. I mean, with all the advantages they had, they couldn't do it. So then the question is, and you read this, and you know this has reference back to what we just studied, you got to ask yourself the question, can we really learn anything about the Christian life from the Old Testament? Well, next week we're going to learn more. We're going to go to the Red Sea. This is victory over death. 13, 14, 15. We're going to go through this, get us to the Red Sea. And then over the next couple weeks, we're going to get from the Red Sea to Sinai. And that's where God makes this people into a nation.